You're with Cape Talk.
This is John Matham on Afternoon Drive.
Service delivery, or as is the case in many places in South Africa, non-service delivery. Marina Well Ngokolo from the Brenthurst Foundation reckons that government should change its approach with regards to service delivery. And part of the solution, she argues, is to instill a culture of kindness and compassion in service delivery. And she is with us now via one of the digital connective mechanisms, doesn't matter which one. Marina Well, a very good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me, John.
Kindness and compassion from a civil servant? You must be jesting.
Not at all, actually, John. I think it is quite important. And it does have the potential to have some sort of an airy-fairy feeling to it. But if you look at the way we desire, you know, governments or systems to function, kindness and compassion really underlies that a lot. And we have so many, you know, frameworks around what government should do and not do, but there's not as much focus on how government should be. And I think that's one of the important things that we need to have more conversations about and figure out what it means to actually make that a part of performance.
I mean, I actually agree with you, because in my personal interactions and in the interactions that listeners have with civil servants, it's clear that when the civil servant that you're dealing with, and you're not getting the service that you expect, but when they show compassion and when they show an understanding of how difficult it is for you to be dealing with them when they're not able, through no fault of their own, some of the time, to deliver the service, you do leave that government building feeling very differently than if you've dealt with somebody who kind of shrugs their shoulders and says, "Tough, what can I do?"
Exactly. It makes all the difference, because really the point of the piece really was to draw attention to exactly this, right? And challenge some of the underlying principles or even values upon which government is based or organized, right? It's an attempt at the how. And John, really, the quality of the system is determined in large part by the quality of the human relationships within it and even beyond that. So it's really important that we are intentional about what we choose to place at the center of our government and governance models. And even, John, it's, you know, I think that in the article I mentioned quite a bit about civil servants, but it goes beyond that, right? Because if we're thinking about government interactions with people, it does involve some of the service providers which they engage in the private sector. So it's a general conversation that we need to have across board and need to be intentional about making it a part of how we interact with one another.
Exactly. And, well, you know, what strikes me sometimes is that there are many, many, many people. I mean, Ubuntu is a I'm not sure that it exists in South Africa anymore to any marked degree, but I do think that Ubuntu is at the center of many people's lives, in their personal lives, in their sets of personal interactions. But unfortunately, the minute those people get into a government post or the post at a bank or a finance institution or an insurance company, that compassion somehow leaches out of them by virtue of the seat that they occupy.
Yeah. And sometimes, I mean, John, it is quite drab. So I have a friend that worked in a ministry, and this is not even here, it was back in Ghana. And it's just like, you almost go in there and sometimes it can be so dry. It almost feels like the life sometimes is sucked out of you. But you find in other spheres of society, even in private sector, right, there is some intentionality around the kinds of attitudes, the kinds of characters that are rewarded or that are encouraged in the workplace. And so the question is, why shouldn't we do that on the other side if government really is a tool, it really is that machinery that we are hoping would make the change that can impact more people than sort of our immediate families, our immediate environment. And so I it's definitely one of the reasons why this idea just seems like, you know, such an interesting one to pursue, because it seems like, you know, it's like being kind to someone. It's not something that you would even think about or even what kindness means, but it's that level of intentionality which applied to government, I think, can make a lot of a difference. And when you, we often talk about sort of even frictional costs of doing business, right? So it's not necessarily the fees you have to pay, but those other costs that are non-monetary that affect decisions. And it could be an investor's interaction at the airport, someone at the desk, right? That could make them question, is this the kind of place I want to be? Because John, I mean, I don't know if you would agree, but you can tell sometimes a lot about a country from how you are sort of greeted or even met at the airport. It tells you a lot about the kinds of people that you will be dealing with. And so the more we are intentional about these kinds of attitudes or characters from the top down, bottom up, I think it has the potential to make a huge difference to be able to achieve all the other things that we need to do, really.
I've traveled to a lot of countries and I can't think of many more than the fingers on one hand where I've gone, oh, I'm looking forward to coming to this country on the basis of the warm welcome that I've received from the immigration people. But I mean, how does one get this inculcated into service delivery, whether you're talking about governmental service delivery or private sector, retail, financial sector delivery? Obviously, you start when you're inducting new people into the business and you make this kind of customer-centered compassion part of the induction process. But how do you change the minds and the attitudes of people who've been in jobs in government or in an insurance company for 30 years and who've got used to doing things in a brisk, no-nonsense, non-compassionate manner?
I mean, it really is like most places, right? It's identifying sort of those core values, right, that you want the organization to operate on or around, whether that's, you know, humility, trust, authenticity, curiosity in terms of interactions, and allowing that to influence, for instance, performance assessment, whether that's on a quarterly or on an annual basis. And it's really not just about developing another dashboard with 1,000 indicators, right? It's actually following up on these things, holding people accountable to these systems, and over time it will change. And I think if there's one thing, you know, perceptions of places or people, it does take a long time to change, but we do have to start from somewhere. And even more on that, there's a chance to use, you know, so many other things to make this difference, whether that be, you know, focusing on getting education right so that we start from much younger or in some of these institutions where people are inculcated with different habits. It could also be with leveraging, you know, technology to do some of these things in the areas where we deliver or offer service to people. And in terms of interactions, really, it's managers and supervisors being intentional about seeking out the strengths of the people that they work with, right? It starts with them as well. Their interest in the people that they work with, how they build on the strengths that they have, how they share power with some of these people who are best placed to actually act on certain things or do interface with the public and can make a difference. Or it could be challenging sort of these existing systems of hierarchy that we have in so many places that are sometimes not very necessary, and encouraging a habit of collaboration, encouraging people to learn more, to want to know more about people who are different than them or people who are paid so they can actually help to solve their problems.
I mean, it sounds like an idealist's dream, but what the heck? You don't turn dreams into reality unless you start working at them.
Yeah, exactly. And it does have an idealist sort of feel to it, but it is part of the solution, right? It's not the only solution. I'm sure half the people you have on this platform will tell you that there are so many other things that we need to do, but it's one of the conversations that we need to have and needs to form a part of the solution to fixing our system, so that be at the government level, at the private level, and really just to make the change that we want to see in terms of being able to achieve growth, being able to attract investors into our country, creating the types of, you know, people that we want as a country who can pursue their dreams to the fullest and also share and come up with ideas that actually make the change we want. Because we don't know where they're hidden, but we certainly will not find them in areas where people are completely checked out and have no desire really to form a part of the solution. It's not going to work.
All power to the dreamers, I say. One of them being my guest, Marie Noel Nwokolo of the Brenthurst Foundation.